Your Financial Choices with host Lori Siegel.
Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP, which is an accredited estate planner, on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is December 18th, 2019. The markets were mixed today with the Dow closing down at 28,239. But to keep this in perspective, last week was 27,911. Okay. The NASDAQ was up to 88,27 and last week was 86,54. And the S&P was down at 31,91 and last week it was 31,41. So since we last talked a week ago, the market actually was up from a week ago, mixed today. So you got to keep these things in perspective. Our topic tonight is New Year's resolutions. I thought we'd cover this now. We're going to be way ahead of the game because actually the next 2 weeks I will be out. I've got Christmas is next Wednesday and New Year's is the Wednesday after that. So we're going to take a break and we will be back January 8th. So we thought we would cover New Year's resolutions this evening. We are live. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we can talk without confusion. We do have discussed general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. And email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. Last week, we did listeners' questions, and I love that. That's actually my favorite thing to do. I love listeners' questions. So in talking about New Year's resolutions tonight, if you have questions about, you know, topics related to that and your financial life, please feel free to call. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can always just give your question to Lori and she'll write it down and she'll bring it in to me. So again, that phone number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So broadly, when we're talking about financial or New Year's resolutions, what can we do differently financially in 2020 than we did in 2019? So broadly, what can we do differently? Let's not get down to the granular piece yet. What can we do broadly? Let's think about what we can do in our financial lives. We can be present, we can engage in our financial decisions, and we can understand consequences of doing something and consequences of not doing something. So let's try to engage in 2020, even little decisions. I tell you, I even feel so good about financial decisions we make as a family when, you know, if we go out to eat and we order drinks and the kids all say water, 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 you know, that is a financial decision and can save a lot of money. That's a little win. Those little wins eventually add up. So resolution, I looked this up and what does it mean to have a resolution? A firm decision to do or not to do something. And I think that's critical to understand, a firm decision. to do or not to do something. It sounds almost like a little bit like procrastination. Maybe New Year's resolutions aren't such a good thing to have, because isn't that what people do? They tend to procrastinate. They make a resolution and then they don't do it. And that is a firm decision not to do something. So I thought about this, and I like the word empowerment so much more. Empowerment, the process of becoming stronger. And this is the definition. It must have been Merriam-Webster. I just Googled it. The empowerment, the process of becoming stronger and more confident, especially in controlling one's life and claiming one's rights. That is just such a better word. I mean, I love empowering people, and I love people being empowered and being action-oriented and versus passive. Probably goes back to my English teachers who used to always say, you know, no passive verbs. You want to use active verbs. It's so much more exciting to read a story that's using action rather than passive. You know, the dog was running. No, the dog leapt through the air. Very different feeling. So let's talk about empowerment tonight. Let's scrap resolutions. We're going to talk about empowerment. So the process of becoming stronger and more confident, especially in controlling one's life and claiming one's rights. So that's what we're going to do tonight. Tonight, 2020, the year of empowerment. We're not making resolutions. We're empowering ourselves. The AICPA, so the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, has a website called 360 Degrees of Financial Literacy, which features tools and resources to empower Americans to make better financial decisions. And they came up with 20 New Year's resolutions. They sent this to me in the hopes that I could interview one of their members probably for the show. Well, I just got this, didn't have time to call one of them, knew I was doing the New Year's resolutions tonight. So some of their tips that I may talk about tonight, I want to give credit to the AICPA, and their goal, I imagine, is to promote awareness, financial awareness to individuals. And they have done that through this website, 360 Degrees of Financial Literacy. So one thing I had noticed about the 20 resolutions that they had come up with, 13 of the 20 relate to cash flow. There are so many more areas of our financial life that I think we could empower ourselves on. And it's not all about nickel and diming ourselves. I will say that cash flow is critical. Because, you know, the less you spend, the more money you're going to have. Then you might say, well, Lori, it's not all about money. It's about living our lives. Yes, it's true. But what happens is we are empowered in our life decisions when we make good financial decisions. We are empowered in our life decisions when we have made good financial decisions, meaning we do a good job saving. We do a good job being in front of our decision making. We're proactive. Later on in life, we're going to be empowered to be able to, whether it's to retire early or on time, pay for our children's education, help support an elderly family member in their time of need, help our charitable endeavors through philanthropy. So these life decisions are empowered when we are empowered in our financial decisions. So we're going to talk about some of these things. Cash flow, I will hit on a few of the items they said, but I also want to talk about where we can be empowered in little ways, little steps in all the areas of our financial life, including investments, taxes, retirement planning, risk management, estate planning, and investments. So I want to kind of give a few empowering tips in each of those areas. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can give your question to Lori. We can talk live on air, or she'll bring in the question to me and I'll answer it off air. Okay, we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000. Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. And tonight we are talking about 2020, the year of empowerment. We are not talking about resolutions. We are talking about the year of empowerment and how can you empower yourself. That way it's not kind of a firm decision to do or not do something. It's just about empowering yourself, whatever that might look like. So let's talk about a few of these items from the AICPA's list of 20 resolutions on cash flow. I'm just going to hit on these and then kind of talk about some of the bigger items that I would kind of encourage people to pay attention to. So one, finally create that budget. They talk about, you know, reviewing your past bank statements and credit cards and sources of income to kind of have an idea of what your income and expenses look like. I will tell you, and I've said this many times on the show for people who listen regularly, people who know how much money they spend are typically people with money. So if the word budget scares you, then don't make a budget. Make a cash flow spreadsheet of what's coming in and what's coming out and kind of have an idea of that. One thing we talk about with clients is the funnel method. If you don't want a budget, the funnel method basically says have all of your sources of income directly deposited into a savings account, and once a month transfer what you think you're spending to your checking account. And over time, if that's how much you think you're spending, let's say it's $3,000 a month and you transfer $3,000 a month and you're constantly having to replenish it, you're spending more than $3,000. If it builds up a little bit, maybe it's because you have some quarterly bills or some non-periodic payments that might be due, so you kind of want to watch that. But that's a good way to kind of know in your mind, you think you're spending X, and you find out you're spending way, way more than X because you have to keep replenishing it. So this is a way to kind of self-discipline. So that's called the funnel method. So creating a budget might not work for you, but knowing where how the income comes in and how it goes out really, really helps. So the funnel method. Cash flow. The other thing I sometimes will tell people to do is like an inventory of your assets. So it's not just cash flow, it's also an inventory of your assets to know maybe how those change over time. If you invest, sometimes you might have a 401k or an IRA, and you'll look at the balance maybe from January 1 to the next January. You can see how it's changed over a year. Well, that's the same thing you might want to do with your other assets and liabilities. It could be your savings account. It could be your mortgage. It's very empowering to see your savings account build up, your retirement accounts build up, and to see your liabilities go down. It's very empowering. It makes you feel good, and it's like a snowball. It just, you know, motivates you to do more and more. So that was one of their items for the on the cash flow side. Create a budget. Develop a plan to defeat credit card interest. Build that emergency reserve they had. Take a hard look at recurring payments. That's something that a lot of people probably miss. You might have set something up to recur. Now, if it's a recurring payment to WDIY as a sustaining member, we love that one. But sometimes people might have recurring payments for magazine subscriptions or some kind of online service, and you don't realize you're not even using it, and you want to review those credit card statements for that type of thing. Make shopping strategy to curb retailer selling strategies. I love that. You know, I've mentioned this story before on air as well, where when my husband and I were first together, we were very young when we met. I was 17 and he was just almost turning 21. Been together a long time. And he would say, you know, when we would be in the grocery store and we'd be in the line, and I would say, oh, look at this, look at this. And he'd say, you know, that is impulse buying. Don't you have to ignore impulse buying. They want you to buy that. So to me, it became also like a little bit of a power trip that I could get through that grocery store line without buying something. I was empowered in that decision not to be taken in by their very clever marketing techniques to get you to buy things. And that happens especially during the holidays. There's all kinds of, ads coming at you with, you know, 25% off and buy two, get one free, and buy one, get one at half price. That's a 25% discount, you know? So we see those all the time. You have to realize there will always be another sale. There really will always be another sale. Don't get caught up in the frenzy of shopping. You're taking, you know, you're letting someone else have control then. And I've tried to raise my kids to shirk marketing ploys to get them to buy money. Some of the other items on here, use reward programs to get free things as long as you don't buy things you don't need. So the rewards programs, if you're going to the grocery store anyway and your grocery store offers gas discounts or something, well, that's great. You would have grocery shopped anyway. You didn't go grocery shopping just to get the gas reward or gas discount. You were going to shop anyway. Using a credit card, my husband and I use a credit card to pay for just about everything, but we pay off our credit card every single month. But we build up points on that credit card, and then we can use that toward our credit card bill at such time it builds up. So that's a nice reward. We're not letting that liability build up. We literally pay off our card every single month. It also gives you some protections on credit when you're buying on credit as well. So that's kind of nice to have some other of those protections that if there's something that, you know, went awry, you didn't like the product, something happened, usually you can work with your credit card company to avoid getting charged. Sell unused or old household items. Well, That is something that some people do. They like maybe eBay or they have a garage sale or something like that. You won't have to sell them if you never buy them. So try to keep in mind, don't buy things you don't need. We really have to be, when I said at the top of the show, what can we do differently? And I said, be present. This is one of those items. You want to be present. Do I need this? Do I want this? And sometimes we let the need cross over to the want, because right now there is something I want, I don't necessarily need, that I've been keeping my eye on something. I'm not going to say what it is, but we really have to kind of talk ourselves off the edge there. So yes, you could sell some things maybe on eBay or in a garage sale or whatever you might call it, but you know, you can also donate those things to Goodwill or to some area shelter or school that might need books or things like that. So that also gives you an opportunity to learn some discipline and reflect back on what am I accumulating and now getting rid of. Did I really use those items? And that would help create discipline going forward in the future that, hey, I just went through my closets and my drawers and I found all this stuff that had, you know, brand new stickers on it, or I rarely used it or never used it. Then the next time you go shopping, you can say to yourself, you know what, I realize I think I need this stuff. I don't. Let me kind of wait on it. And that was another trick my husband taught me. He said, if you still remember it tomorrow, you can come back and get it. And I can't tell you how many times I've been able to get out of the mall not buying anything, thinking, well, if I'm still thinking about it tomorrow, I'll go get it. And here I ended up not buying anything. So it's that giving the kid two cookies or one cookie. It's about being present. Folks, if you have questions, we are talking about empowering yourself with good financial decisions next year in 2020. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Rosalie.
And Steve.
Join us and other hosts each Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. for Swing Sunday, a great mix of swing, big band, and classic vocals.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just call in and give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it in. And the number again is 610-758-8810. So referring back to this AICPA resource website, 360 Degrees of Financial Literacy, again, featuring tools and resources to empower Americans to make better financial decisions. And they had come up with 20 New Year's resolutions. And I'm just highlighting a few of their resolutions relating to cash flow. Also, if I catch this one, there's certain ones, sometimes people give you advice and you have to understand, just like when we talk on the radio, this is educational and sometimes it's broad, and you really have to understand the circumstances that apply to you. And as I go through a couple other things on this list, I will try to point those out. Be careful when you're given general advice. Make sure that you empower yourself with what you're being told. Check it out, research it, talk to experts, to make sure that whatever it is, that it's going to be right for you and that you're moving forward in making good decisions for yourself. So some other items on cash flow: teach kids another good habit, money management. You hear people talk about that. You know, sometimes people pay allowance, sometimes they don't. Really, the best thing you can probably do for your kids is show them how you're careful with your money. If you're running out to restaurants and buying willy-nilly and putting everything on a credit card and the kids don't understand that you have to pay that off or how you do that, what example are you setting for them? So it's good to talk to your children about financial things, you know, like getting water if you are going to go out to eat. You know, what we've, our little mantra has been lately in our house is, oh gosh, do you guys want to go out to eat? Oh no, let's look in our fridge first. We really should work down the food in our fridge first. And you know what? We're all doing it now. I mean, my son, who used to love, you know, when I'd say, hey, should we run out to the diner and grab something to eat? He said to me the other night, because it was just he and I, and I thought, oh, that'll be nice. We'll go out together. And he says, Mom, you know, I think we should eat the stuff in the refrigerator. I'm like, okay, great, Kyle. Good point. And so it has become contagious because we are all doing it now. And sometimes we're eating like a smorgasbord for dinner because, you know, it's not just one thing. We're trying to take the little bit out of this container and the little bit out of that container, and then this fruit that might go bad if I don't eat it today, and vegetables. So it's worked out really, really well. So be a good example. Shop around for better banking deals. This was one of their tips. The bank down the street may be convenient, but that doesn't mean it's the best place to keep your cash. So they're, what they're talking about there is interest. You know, if you're going to have some savings in the bank, are you earning anything on it? A lot of the banks that are online banks that aren't brick and mortar anymore are paying higher interest rates. They don't have that overhead of the bricks and mortar. That could work out. You could still have a local bank account for your, you know, local banking needs. You have to get cash out of the ATM or run in and deposit a check. That works out really well. But maybe the big chunk of money that you might have saved, your 6 months reserve for emergencies, maybe you want to you know, park that over on at one of the online banks if they have some decent rates of return and they're a well-known bank, that kind of thing. Some other tips, buy in bulk. Well, buy in bulk is fine as long as you're not wasting what you're buying in bulk. So be careful of that. Home dining experience, create a savings goal. Sometimes people will talk about 10 to 15% of savings. What I would probably look at there is look to see if you're currently saving. And if you're not currently saving, this could be one of those empowering things you want to do next year is say, I want to save $50 a month. Start with that, or $100 a month, or I'm going to put in a jar everything I would have spent on, you know, soda or drinks or cigarettes or something like that. So set it aside, see how that builds up. And again, that becomes empowering. All right. So those are just some tips on cash flow. But keep in mind, people who know how much they spend are generally people who have money. Some other areas that we can empower ourselves in 2020, investments. What could we do about investments? Some people don't want to learn anything about investments. It's overwhelming. They don't want to hear about it. They don't understand it. Well, that doesn't mean that you still can't make some good decisions about investments. So, for example, maybe you don't want to talk about investments, but maybe you work and you have a retirement account and you're making a good decision putting money into that retirement account. You might not understand all the options that are there. Usually your employer plan would have a website where you could go on and kind of, you know, tool around and see what you might learn in that regard. If it's too overwhelming, a lot of retirement plan investment options now include target date funds. A target date fund is kind of already diversified and allocated in such a way to your risk tolerance based on your age, like your time horizon. That might be a way to dip your foot in your toe into the water and kind of get used to it. There's also a website called Investopedia. Investopedia is a kind of a fun website that if you hear something, you're driving down the road, you're listening to the radio, and you hear someone say something about ETF, and you say, what's an ETF? I don't know what an ETF. So many people are shy about asking questions. I'm not shy at all. If I don't know something, I'm going to ask. And that's how you learn and you build on your vocabulary and your the experience and everything. So you don't know what an ETF is. Well, a lot of us would just Google ETF. But the nice thing about Investopedia that I've appreciated is you not only get the definition of what it is you needed to know about, but quite often they have related articles. So they go into more than just the definition. They have, professionals who offer articles to the website, and I think they get vetted, and they're really quite often very good articles. So you might read a little bit more. So, now I learned an ETF is an exchange traded fund. How is an exchange traded fund different than a mutual fund? Maybe you don't know what a mutual fund is. You could look that up too. And what you'll learn is they're both baskets of some type of investment. One gets traded like a stock intraday. The other one only trades at the end of the day when they get the value of all those little pieces in the mutual fund. Might be important for you to understand the difference between an exchange traded fund and a mutual fund, because that could make a difference in your investing. So you just do it a little bit of it at a time. So investments, you can start to just learn a little bit more at a time. And most importantly, be able to have enough of an understanding that if you use professionals to help you, that you know what kinds of questions to ask. And I will also add that a professional that is going to help you should also be helping you understand it yourself. I don't like when people want to make things seem so complicated that you need me, you know, that I'm not going to give you enough information because I want you to think you need me. It shouldn't be like that. It should be a partnership, and you should understand enough so that you can make better decisions for yourself, even if you're in partnership with an advisor in any realm, whether it's taxes, estate planning, investments, banking, whatever. So empower yourself. Folks, we are talking about 2020, Year of Empowerment, things you can do in your financial life in 2020. Phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY 88.1. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Right now, we're going to look at the Lehigh Valley weather forecast. Currently, it's 29 degrees. There are still some scattered snow showers out there tonight, mainly before 7, so it's getting close. Then it's going to be mostly cloudy and gradually clearing with a low around 13 degrees tonight, chilly. Winds in the teens and the upper teens with gusts as high as 30 miles an hour. So it's cold. Bundle up out there. And if you're on the roads, please drive carefully. Tomorrow, Thursday, sunny, high 26. Thursday night, clear, low 17. And into the weekend, sunny days, highs in the 30s, and clear nights, lows in the teens. Lori, it's really fun listening to you reveal yourself in this show. I really enjoy that.
I'm telling you all my secrets, Norm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Folks, we are back with Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can call in your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in. And it could be anything. We did listeners' questions last week, and I absolutely loved it. It's my favorite thing. And so if you have questions, that's fine. It doesn't have to be about, you know, empowering yourself for financial decisions next year. Although I'm hoping that everything we do here at Your Financial Choices empowers you. A couple other things on investments I was going to mention about empowering. Understanding the geography of your investments. I have seen where people come in and they have all their fixed income in their, you know, individual account, and they have all their stock in their retirement account. That you want to review that because if you know a little bit about investments, if you have fixed income, that's usually interest income. Fixed income is interest. Interest is taxed as ordinary income. When you have equities, your equities have the potential to have qualified dividends. Qualified dividends qualify for lower tax rates. And if your equities appreciate in value, which we've seen this year, if your equities appreciate in value and you sell them and they're long-term, meaning you've held them over a year, those long-term gains are also subject to lower tax rates. Those lower tax rates can be zero if you're in basically a 12% bracket or lower. 15% if you're in a tax bracket above 12%. And at the very, very most, if you really make tons of money, like over $400,000, then that to the extent your capital gains exceed that value, they would be taxed at 20%. So really much lower income tax rates on those qualified dividends and long-term capital gains. So if I have that type of investments, those equities in my retirement account, in my IRA, and I have the fixed income in my individual account, because I think I want to protect that money I'm taking out today. Well, you have to understand that if I have the fixed income in my individual account, that's all ordinary income. What some people don't understand is in your retirement account, if you have all equities and now you're taking distributions, the distributions all come out as ordinary income. So you just have taken, if in that very extreme example of fixed income in your individual account and equities in your IRA account, you've turned all of your investment income into ordinary income. So that's also an empowering thing for your investments as you go into 2020. Try to look at your whole picture, your whole, you know, portfolio, to see where do you have those investments. You could, if someone is 50-50, 50% equities and 50% fixed income, and you have half your money outside of retirement accounts and half of your money inside retirement accounts, you could kind of maximize the tax savings by repositioning some of those positions. Personally, I would like the equity in my individual account while understanding if I am like an aggressive investor, probably a lot of my retirement account would be in equities too. I'm not saying that you would not have equities in your retirement account. I'm just talking about being aware of the different kinds of taxable income you have within your portfolio. Where is the fixed income? Where is the equity exposure? And can you manipulate that a little bit to make your portfolio a little bit more tax efficient? All right. So I hope that helps a little bit. Go look and you'll see and you'll go, wow, didn't know that. And so I wanted to mention, as I did earlier, when I said sometimes you get advice and you hear things on the radio and people, you know, say, well, this is from the experts and this is what I have to go do. And I'm telling you, you want to still maybe make sure you're talking with someone about it. Does it that mean it's applicable for you? One of these items in this AICPA list of 20 resolutions said, make 2020 contributions as early as possible. Now, if I'm a speed reader and I saw this and I read that, I might say, that's a great idea. This comes from the experts. I'm going to just make my 2020 contributions. And they're talking about retirement account contributions as early as possible. And I went on to read the description a little bit, and they didn't have any like asterisks or careful, be watch out for this. I want to caution people, if you read such a thing, I want to caution you from doing that. Because if you are putting money in a retirement plan at work and they match you and they match up to 3%, let's say, of what, let's say you put in 6% and they put in 3%. And let's say in January, you decide you're going to put in your maximum contribution. You got a huge bonus in January. You put $19,500 in 2020. That's what it's gone up to for 401ks and 403bs. You put in $19,500. You got a huge bonus and you could afford to do it. And you do it all in January because you read this. Make 2020 contributions as early as possible. You get your 3% match. And then what happens in February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December, you're not getting the match. You're not getting a 3% match anymore. So you might not want to do that. You want to do it throughout the year in that circumstance. So be careful of that. Another caution on doing contributions as early as possible. Let's say you're someone who funds an IRA every year, and you don't have a plan at work, or maybe you have a plan at work, but you've always been under the threshold where the IRS income threshold that allows you to not only put money in your retirement account at work, but you also can put money in an IRA, a deductible IRA. You love this. You can put money in your 401k. You can put money in a deductible IRA. Or you're someone who doesn't have a 401k and you've always done the deductible IRA. You want to be careful about doing it as early as possible. If you don't have a retirement account at work and the only thing you have is an IRA, you would be okay to do it as early as possible if you know you're going to have at least that much in earnings. So the contribution is, let's say, $6,000, $1,000 catch-up if you're over age 50. You could put $7,000 in because you know you're going to make $7,000. But what if you're a part-time worker? You had always done that. You made $24,000 working part-time in your retirement. You always, you're 65 and you always put money into the IRA. And this year, you know, you cut back on hours and you only made $4,000. Well, if you put your full contribution amount that the IRS allows you in January of $7,000 and you only made $4,000, you're limited to $4,000. So that right there might not have been such a great idea. Or if you're someone who has a 401k at work and you're putting money in your 401k and you also do an IRA or maybe a spousal IRA, if all of a sudden you, at tax time, you go to do your tax return and your income is over the threshold that the IRS allows you to do both, you may have overfunded your IRA, and that is called an excess contribution. And there can be a 50% penalty on an excess contribution. So back to reading things, make contributions as early as possible. It all depends. I would say more times than not, it's not necessarily a good idea to do them as early as possible. And the same thing can apply for a Roth IRA. You may not be eligible for the Roth IRA if your income goes over a certain threshold or you don't have enough in earned income. The beauty of IRAs and Roth IRAs is the IRS lets us have until April 15th to fund them. So you can make sure that you're going to qualify to make those contributions. So there might not be a reason to rush. I like the idea of saving, but there may be reasons you don't want to fully fund it up front. But certainly set the money aside. I mean, nothing is wrong with that to save up and make sure that you have it and then you're ready to fund it. And then you can go and prepare your tax return as early as you can so you have an idea of whether you really can do that or not. And then you can get it funded as soon as you've confirmed that. All right. So something to think about. Taxes, empowering yourself on taxes. I'm just going to say, don't be afraid of them. I mean, don't be afraid of them. It's income taxes. Some people get so upset and nervous about their income taxes. So empower yourself. Don't be afraid. Sometimes I think the fear of them keeps us from acting and being proactive in understanding our tax decisions. You may be eligible for tax credits. You may be eligible for tax savings. And unless you kind of get over this fear, you're not going to move forward in being able to empower yourself and making really good decisions around your tax return. Yes, we earn money. We have to pay income taxes if we earn enough. You want to make sure you understand maybe tax brackets. You'd be surprised how many people don't understand the tax brackets. It is a tiered system. Some of our income is taxed at zero because we have a bracket at zero. We have a standard deduction. We might have itemized deductions that would offset income. So there is some of our income that's going to be at zero. Some might be at 12%, 10%. Some might be at 12%. And as we make more and more money, some might be at 22. But if we're in a 22% tax bracket, it doesn't mean it's all taxed at 22. If we're in a 22% tax bracket, that's what I would call the marginal rate, meaning the next dollar might be at 22%. And if you go over into the 24% tax bracket, then that next marginal dollar might be at that. But it's not all your income. It's tiered. So if you look at tax bracket schedules, that kind of helps you start to see that. So again, some of our money gets taxed differently. And also, it gets taxed differently if we have qualified dividends or capital gain income. So my empowering moment for 2020 is don't be afraid of it. Face it. Face it. Just go for it. Of course, I can say that because I love taxes. I like figuring them out. I think it's very interesting, and taxes do serve a purpose. So I recognize that as well. What can we do about empowering ourselves with our retirement accounts? Well, one thing I would say is, get information. And if you're a young person, the best advice you're going to get is from someone who's, maybe 60, 62, 63, and they're still working. Ask them, what is their best advice for you to work towards retirement? And I'm going to tell you, probably undoubtedly, they're going to say, gosh, I wish I would have saved more when I was young. I mean, undoubtedly, you hear it over and over again. I wish I would have started sooner. I wish I would have started earlier. I mean, it's very tough when someone comes in to us saying, hey, can I get a financial plan done? I think I want to retire and I'm 65 and I'm not sure I can do it. So empower yourself and take control and own it when you're younger and realize life goes very, very fast. And the more you kind of save, it teaches you discipline early on. And that makes such a big difference in so many different things in your life. Folks, we're at the last break. It's a little quiet tonight. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY, Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11, offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY.org. Podcasts of prior shows are also available there at WDIY.org. Look for the tab Local Programming. Scroll down to Your Financial Choices, and pages of podcasts will show up, and you can listen to the topic that you're most interested in, or maybe a topic you're not interested in at all, and you could learn something new. And if you ever have any ideas of topics you'd like to hear about on the show, please share those with us at yourfinancialchoices.com. I want to make sure that we are covering topics that are of interest to you. So tonight we are talking about 2020, the year of empowerment, and the year of empowerment in your financial decisions. Little steps, take the pressure off. Don't call it a resolution. Just call it ways to empower yourself. And frankly, I just get so excited when people do a good job with their financial decisions. And this isn't coming from someone who's made the best financial decisions in their life. There were times I wasn't saving in my retirement account. You know, there was college tuition to pay for. And, you know, I just had to make some decisions about what we were doing. And, you know, so you do the best with the information that you have at the time. And you can't have regrets and feel sorry for yourself about things you've done in the past. Empower yourself today and move forward and make better decisions tomorrow. It's really a great feeling. So, retirement. So we talked about, you know, saving early. We talked a little bit about earlier about the investment, the geography of your investments. Look at that would be an easy thing for you to do, especially at year end, to kind of look and see what the geography of your investments is. Retirement planning could also include understanding what your cash flow might look like in the future. How much money do you have today? How do you have to have for when you retire? And keep in mind that when you go into retirement, you might have other sources of cash flow, such as Social Security. Some people still have pensions, and you might have an investment portfolio that could throw off some interest and dividends, and that would help with the income cash flow. And that you might not have to cover, some people think their investment portfolio has to cover like all of their expenses, but you have to back out your fixed income sources, as I mentioned, of Social Security or pension. So your portfolio might not have to produce everything for you, and you might not have to draw on your portfolio for everything. So kind of have in your mind where your buckets of resources are going to come from for your retirement. And there's nothing wrong with taking a part-time job in retirement as well. I know a lot of people who continue to work. They quit their, you know, full-time regular grind kind of job. And then in their retirement, they could get a part-time job doing fun things that they, you know, are passionate about or love doing. And that can really help extend your investment portfolio into the later years because you're not having to tap it for cash flow reasons. So nothing wrong with taking part-time jobs, and it keeps you active, it keeps you engaged, and kind of helps you take control and of your own situation. So empowering you in your retirement. Risk management is you know, insurance. So we want to make sure that you're reviewing all your coverage, your life, auto, and home, etc. We have a caller. We have Richard on line one from Pohatcong Township. Hi, Richard. It's Lori. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hi, Richard. How are you?
Oh, all right, Lori.
Good. How can I help you?
You know, I have a question. It is more of a kind of a theoretical question. Must be almost from a Scrooge point of view.
Okay.
And that with the idea of rental properties.
Uh-huh.
And I keep, you know, you run into situations, you read about it or you hear about it, where when your current lease expires, the new lease is really, some of the rent from the renter's point of view, it might be considered gouging. You know, the increase is over 20%.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And my question would be, is there something in the landlord's or the property owner's handbook where there are advantages to having a property that is empty for months, maybe even longer than that, and it's uninhabited, but, you know, there is no payment by tenant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to, you know, just look at it from the other side of the equation, that there's because it seems to be so common that people would be willing to give up a good, sure thing in the hopes of getting maybe 20% more, but doesn't happen for 6 or 7 months down the road. So, you know, you wonder, how does it work out financially?
Okay. So it sounds like this could be kind of two focuses on this question, meaning, number one, if there's a landlord who increases the rent 20%, what's the reason they're doing it? Could it be that they're doing it in the hopes of getting higher rent, even though they'll sacrifice a few months of not having any rent? Or might they be increasing the rent for some other reason? Like, would there be some benefit to have it vacant? I am not sure why someone would necessarily increase the rent 20% unless there was something happening in the area where they were living. Maybe a new corporate complex is coming in and they're expecting, you know, 1,200 employees to come into the area. And maybe they want to, there's maybe a lack of other rental properties available out there, and they want to kind of, you know, raise the rent now to kick other people out so that when, you know, these 1,200 people come into the area, maybe that'll get them that rent increase they want. So that could be a reason why I might see someone raise rent, because the market is driving it. It could be that they haven't raised rent for 10 years. Maybe they had a really good tenant and maybe that tenant left, or they need to do a bunch of repairs and haven't done anything for a while. And the only way they're going to be able to afford doing the repairs or the renovations or the upkeep on the property is to raise the rent. Generally, a landlord shouldn't purposely raise rents to have a vacant property. Because, number one, you have to have the apartment available for rent in order to treat it as a rental property. It has to be available for rent. And what I try to always explain to people is it's always better to take the money in. So sometimes people think, oh, I'm going to get a rental property because I'm going to get a huge tax write-off for that. So maybe they think a tax, you know, write-off is really good. Well, you know, if you have a tax write-off, sometimes you're still not ahead. You're still paying a mortgage and you have depreciation, you have repairs, you have utilities. So sometimes it's still costing you money. You really want something to provide a positive cash flow for you. And sometimes when a rental property is collecting the money, but they still might show a loss because of the depreciation, You don't always get to take the loss. It depends on how much other income you have on your return. So some people don't realize that. They go into the real estate business and they think they're going to get all these great losses on their tax return and because of the depreciation. And it doesn't always work out that way because maybe your income is too high and the IRS doesn't let you take them and they're suspended. So Richard, that's just some kind of observations. You're right. It's you know, not probably a specific question, but I could see where someone might try to raise the rent, but, unless they're trying to get someone out of the property. Did that help?
Yes. I just, both sides of the table, so to speak, the player side and the house side.
Yeah.
And, it's sometimes you want to understand the psychology because you see, on the various real estate markets, there seems to be vacant properties. You hear stories, maybe somebody's in business, they've been renting for a while, and then they start to show a profit, and now it's time to renew that lease, and suddenly the landlord, for their reasons, they reset the lease, in that double figures, 20% or something like that, and it discourages the person who's, created a business, and... I wanted to know if there was a secret sauce that the landlord was benefiting from that it wasn't apparent in the in this transaction.
Well, I would say if someone's raising the rent because their profit got too much and they want to cut their profit back down, I would say that's not a good business decision because profit. I even tell people even after taxes. Bringing money in is better than not. So, okay, Richard. Well, it's all interesting. So good luck. And if you're in that business or you're party to it, best wishes and happy holidays. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. It's interesting discussion. And it's amazing how often it does come up that people will say, well, I don't want to pay taxes. I had someone recently who some tax planning was sent to me. I have not spoken to this person personally, brand new. And they said, I don't want to owe any taxes. I would rather give to charity than taxes. And I'm like, well, okay, how much are we talking here? How much do you really want to give to charity? Because if you owe $20,000, you're going to have to give a boatload to charity, which is fine, but you're still going to be out of pocket. So if to eliminate a $20,000 tax, you have to give $60,000 to charity, you're still out of pocket $40,000. Is that what the real intent was? People might not realize if they think they want to lower their taxes $20,000, do they think giving $20,000 to charity is going to lower them? No, it's only the tax savings. So I love people giving to charity and nonprofits. It's wonderful. But don't do it just to save taxes. Do it because that's your intent and, you're philanthropic and you understand the reason for giving. So again, sometimes it's not always about, the taxes. So, and same thing with profit, you don't want to say no to making money because of the taxes. If net of those taxes, you're still ahead. So, kind of pay attention to that. In finishing our empowerment discussion, risk management, I mentioned insurance, just make sure you review all that periodically for deductibles and, your coverage, et cetera. And the big thing I want to end with empowering, please, 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 in this next year, 2020, if you have not had your estate planning documents done, please, please try to make that a goal for 2020. I love working with estate planning attorneys and folks just to get that done. You don't want someone else making that decision for you. So empower yourself, make the decision for yourself. Don't let the government make the decision for you. Do your estate planning. And at least by doing a review of your asset titling and your beneficiary designations, that's a great first step and a great first start. Folks, we're going to be out for a couple weeks here. We'll be back January 8th. And not sure what I'm talking about January 8th, but you can watch WDIY.org for that information. Everyone, please have safe and happy holidays and be safe in your travels and make the best of your financial choices. Oh, pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week. Thank you, Norm. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, listeners.